Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Caroline Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Bella. And I, too, would like to welcome everyone to this program today, which is done in partnership with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care. And today's program is titled Triple Negative Breast Cancer, Coping with a Fear of Recurrence, which is a really important topic to address. And we have wonderful speakers who will be addressing this topic. And the program has been made possible by the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, and we thank them for their support of this program. Now, before I introduce our first speaker, I'd like to do a few things. One is I tell you that there are over 350 participants on the call today, and you come from all over the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have international participants from Australia, Belgium, Canada, the Cayman Islands, Iraq, Nigeria, the Philippines, Switzerland, Uganda, and the United Kingdom. So this is truly a global call, and it's a credit to all of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Shimoli Barot. Dr. Barot is Associate Staff, Breast Medical Oncology, Cleveland Clinic, Taussig Cancer Center. And Dr. Barot will be addressing an overview of triple negative breast cancer and follow-up care and making informed treatment choices. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Barot.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. I will be starting with the overview of triple negative breast cancer. So we know that it represents only about 10 to 15% of all the different subtypes of breast cancer, but it is considered relatively the most aggressive type of breast cancer. In terms of how we diagnose this disease, a lot of times we will have people present to us in clinic with breast mass that they have felt on exam, or they may have skin changes or nipple discharge, or they may have felt lymph nodes under their armpit, or the tumor might have just been incidentally picked up on a screening mammography or an MRI or a CAT scan that they may have had for some other purpose. Once we know about the tumor, the next step usually is to perform diagnostic imaging, which includes a mammogram, which is diagnostic and 3D, so specifically focuses on the particular area of the tumor. There may also be an ultrasound of the breast and the armpit area included as a part of the workup, and sometimes we also order an MRI of the breast to look at this area further. This is usually followed by a biopsy of the tumor and may also include a biopsy of the lymph nodes under the armpit if they look abnormal. Scans of the entire body, including a CAT scan of the chest, abdomen, and pelvis, and a nuclear medicine bone scan or a PET scan may be part of the workup to see if the breast cancer has spread beyond the breast and the lymph nodes under the armpit and has gone anywhere in the body. Because triple negative breast cancer disproportionately affects people with BRCA1 genes or other gene changes that are hereditary, genetic testing may also be part of the evaluation. Once these evaluations are complete, it gives us more details about the biology of the tumor and helps us understand the tumor better. The biopsy report can tell us if where the tumor originated, and that can usually be in the milk ducts, it can be in the milk lobules, or it can be in the area in between the milk ducts and the milk lobules. We determine the exact size of the tumor. We determine if the lymph nodes under the armpit are involved with the breast cancer. And it also gives us an idea of how aggressive the tumor is and how fast it's growing by giving us a grade. And triple negative breast cancer is usually higher grade at grade 2 or grade 3. Most importantly, the biopsy gives us the answer of testing three proteins, estrogen receptor or ER, progesterone receptor or PR, and HER2-new or HER2 receptors. These receptors or proteins are present in the cancer cell and give us an idea of what basically fueled this cancer and what helped this cancer grow. So if someone has cancer driven by estrogen and progesterone hormones, these are usually ER/PR positive breast cancers, and the treatments are anti-estrogen or anti-progesterone treatments. If someone has tumors that are driven by the HER2 protein, then these tumors are treated with anti-HER2 therapies. But for triple negative breast cancer, we cannot detect any of the three receptors or proteins. So it's estrogen receptor negative, progesterone receptor negative, and HER2 receptor negative, which is what makes the cancer triple negative. And so the kind of treatments that we choose for this kind of breast cancer are usually chemotherapy. And now in the last few years, we've also had the approval of a newer kind of treatment called immunotherapy for these kind of tumors. In terms of treatment, for the control of the disease, local therapy, so surgery is a part of the treatment, and that can include a lumpectomy, which is just removal of the area of the tumor in the breast, or it can be a mastectomy on the side of the tumor. And for people who have the BRCA mutation, who have a very high risk of getting breast cancer recurrently during their lifetime, a bilateral mastectomy may also be considered as a part of their surgical plan. The surgery also involves evaluation of the lymph nodes under the armpit, and that evaluation can either be a sentinel lymph node removal, which is the first station that the breast cancer goes to if it goes to the lymph nodes under the armpit, or it may involve removal of multiple lymph nodes from under the armpit called an axillary lymph node dissection, if the cancer has gone to multiple lymph nodes under the armpit. A part of the treatment is also radiation therapy, which can be to the breast area which has the tumor. It can be to the chest wall, and it can also include area of the axilla, which is under the armpit, which had the lymph nodes involved with the breast cancer. If the breast cancer is detected very early, such as by a screening mammography, or if it was a tumor that was very superficial that was felt and detected when it is a very small size and it has not gone to the lymph nodes under the armpit, the treatment usually involves surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy, which can include multi-agent chemotherapy. So it usually has at least two or three different kinds of chemotherapy that are given after completion of the surgery and radiation local therapy. But most everyone else whose tumors are usually larger and have lymph node involvement, we try to give treatment before they undergo surgery or radiation therapy, which is called neoadjuvant therapy. The neoadjuvant therapy that is currently approved and used across at least the United States is a combination of multiple chemotherapy agents as well as immunotherapy. It is about 6 months that people will receive this chemo-immunotherapy combination, which includes four different kind of chemotherapeutic agents and this novel treatment called immunotherapy. The way I think about it is that the immunotherapy is basically teaching the patient's own immune system to learn to fight the cancer cell and recognize the cancer cell. And we know that it works very well for triple negative breast cancer. And so in the last few years, there has been approval of including immunotherapy as part of treatment in addition to chemotherapy in the neoadjuvant or pre-surgery and radiation therapy. That will be followed by, of course, surgery and radiation, which is the local therapy. And then treatments are also continued in the adjuvant setting, which means that it is the post-local therapy setting or the post-surgery and radiation setting. If by doing these 6 months of combination of chemotherapy and immunotherapy, when the surgeon goes in and takes the area of the tumor out, if we were able to successfully kill 100% of the tumor cells in the surgical specimen, then we call this a complete pathological response or a PCR. And in these cases, we continue maintenance treatment with immunotherapy for a total of 1 year from the time we started treatment. However, if we do find that the surgical specimen included any cancer cell that was still active and not completely killed off with the treatment that we gave before surgery, then usually we will start the patient on a chemotherapy pill called capecitabine. Or now we also have a pill which targets the BRCA mutation, and these pills are called PARP inhibitors, and they are approved for anyone who has cancer left during the time of surgery and they have a BRCA mutation. So this is usually the way we treat early stage or non-metastatic triple negative breast cancer. Once the patient has completed their treatment, the follow-up usually includes being evaluated in our clinic, which includes a history as well as a physical exam, including an exam of the breast area or the chest wall and the armpit area. And we usually see patients every 3 to 6 months in the first 1 to 3 years. And then every 6 to 12 months in year 4 and year 5, and then we will see them once a year after year 5, because we know that the risk of the triple negative breast cancer coming back or recurrence is the highest in the first 5 years and then reduces subsequently. These visits also include making sure that if there is any breast tissue left and someone has not had a bilateral mastectomy, then we still undergo a mammogram once a year. And if someone has dense breast tissue or they have very high risk of the disease coming back, such as genetic changes or BRCA mutation, then they are additionally approved to undergo an MRI of the breast area once a year as well. We also will make sure that there is no update in terms of genetic recommendations for the family. And we don't do scans for patients because unless there are signs or symptoms of disease, and these include any signs or symptoms of the cancer having spread in the brain, lungs, lymph nodes, liver, and rarely in the bone areas. And of course, we know that clinical trials are our gold standard. And there are a lot of new and exciting treatments such as antibody drug conjugates and vaccines that are upcoming, which could be great options. And so that is always a question you should discuss with your team if clinical trials are a good option for you. And with that, I would like to thank you for attending, and we'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you so much, Dr. Barot. That was just an exquisite presentation. You're the first speaker. So it was a stellar presentation, and you set the tone for today's program by providing such wonderful information for all participants. And so thank you so much. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Shelley Jones. And Dr. Jones is board-certified clinical health psychologist, associate professor of medicine, and Walters Scholar in psycho-oncology, Indiana University School of Medicine, research scientist, Center for Health Services and Research, Regenstrief Institute, member, Cancer Prevention and Control Research Program, Indiana University, Simon Comprehensive Cancer Center. And Dr. Jones will be addressing concerns that cancer may come back and events that may trigger fear of recurrence. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Johns.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, and I'm so thrilled to be here with all of you today. Fear of recurrence is a topic that I always really appreciate having the opportunity to talk about, not because it's a fun topic for anybody on the call, of course, but because it's such an important topic because almost anybody who's been diagnosed with cancer probably experiences some fear of recurrence at some point. In their survivorship. The reason why I have been so attached to this topic is because in my first day of clinic, when I worked in the very first cancer center that I ever worked in back in 1996, the first young lady that I saw that day was really, really struggling, understandably, with fear of recurrence. And it really impressed me so much because she was a young breast cancer survivor who had two small children at home. And her mother had also had breast cancer earlier in her life, and she was so afraid that she was going to not survive her cancer and that she would, not be able to see her children grow up. And so it touched my heart so much. She was so, just so able to describe, her thoughts, her feelings, and her fears so descriptively that I almost, I could feel my heart rate increasing, even when she spoke. And so I knew that I wanted to offer her something, to bring her a little more peace and a little more ease during her breast cancer treatment. And so I'll be talking with you a little bit later in my time about some of the things that we worked on together and the things that really, really, seemed to be very effective for her. But before we go into all of that, I did want to mention that, kind of describe what fear of recurrence is and give you the quote-unquote official definition that's been agreed upon by lots of professionals who study fear of recurrence. It's defined as the fear, worry, or concern relating to the possibility that cancer could come back or progress. And so probably everybody on this call today understands a little bit what fear of recurrence is because you may have a felt sense of it. You may know what it's like to be concerned about cancer, progressing or coming back. And so, other people would describe it as just a nagging worry that the cancer could come back either during or after treatment. And the fear can manifest in a variety of different ways, such as intrusive thoughts. You might be sitting at work and, trying to get your project completed, and then all of a sudden you'll just have a memory or a thought that comes into your mind and just, that felt sense of anxiety and, maybe even, noticing some physical symptoms of anxiety like an increased heart rate. It may interrupt your sleep at night. It may decrease your appetite. It may decrease the amount of joy that you get in activities that you used to find quite enjoyable. And just so for many people, this fear of recurrence can become so pronounced that it interferes with daily activities. I mentioned work. It can interfere with work. It can even get in the way of relationships because sometimes some of the breast cancer survivors I work with, they are just so just working through a lot of this in their mind that they become a little bit distant at times with their partners or with their children or, with their friends and family. It can also just get in the way of enjoyment of life. And so it's completely natural and understandable to experience these concerns because, cancer is an important disease and life is important. And so it's understandable where this fear comes from. So just to throw a little number at you here, there are lots of different studies where the prevalence of fear of recurrence has been assessed, and we do this by, you know, inviting breast cancer survivors to complete a survey, you know, asking them questions about their fear of recurrence. And what we have discovered is that usually about 40% of breast cancer survivors, this is not specific just to triple negative, you know, people with triple negative breast cancer, but about 40% of breast cancer survivors tend to report that they sometimes experience moderate to severe levels of fear of recurrence. So if this is true for you, just realize that you are absolutely not at all alone. So one of the other things that Dr. Messner had invited me to talk about are, you know, what are some of the triggers of fear of recurrence? And so one of the biggest triggers that the people that I work with talk about are just their routine medical appointments, you know, their mammograms, if they're still doing mammograms, labs or other testing. Those can really provoke some anxiety. In fact, a lot of people say that they don't get any sleep between when they, you know, have the test run and when they get their results. While these appointments are, you know, are absolutely crucial for monitoring health, the lead up to them, you know, can really bring back memories of the cancer journey and, you know, uncertainty related to results. So completely understandable. You know, another common trigger that people tell me about are bodily sensations. You know, like you might be just going about your day and then all of a sudden you have, you know, some back pain. You know, the first thing that comes to mind for a lot of breast cancer survivors, you know, is, oh my gosh, what's causing that back pain? Do I have, you know, bone metastases? Or, you know, maybe you got short of breath walking up a flight of stairs. You know, the automatic thought for a lot of people is, oh my gosh, does this mean the cancer spread to my lungs? You know, things like that. So again, completely understandable. And one of the things that we have found in working with people who get really triggered by bodily sensations is to, you know, really to look at those symptoms to see, do they need to be addressed by a healthcare professional, or could they be explained, you know, like I said, if you get short of breath walking up a flight of stairs, does that shortness of breath go away 5 minutes later, or does it kind of stick with you longer? So really kind of looking at some of those symptoms from a little bit more of an objective standpoint to determine, is this a symptom that I need to notify a healthcare provider about, or is that something that can be explained by, you know, two or three other causes? Another big trigger for a lot of people is seeing others whose cancer has recurred, or even seeing somebody else just diagnosed with cancer. Sometimes that really can bring up a lot of memories about one's own cancer experience. Social media can sometimes be a big trigger too. You know, the pearls and perils of social media, right? We can probably all agree there. And so the last trigger that I'll talk about today is just life transitions, you know, just normal, natural life transitions like, you know, returning to work or celebrating a milestone. Some of those could stir up feelings of vulnerability for some survivors, and these moments can bring about reflections, you know, on what one has been through, and it's really important to just recognize that these feelings are valid. So I wanted to circle back real quick. My time is almost up, but I wanted to circle back to the lady that I talked about that I worked with on my very first day in clinic. And we worked together for several months until she got through all of her treatment. And what we found that was really helpful for her at the time was just, you know, making space for whatever it was that she was thinking, feeling, and noticing in her body. Looking at all of that from a place of self-compassion and non-judgment, also getting more in touch with this present moment. We started using some mindfulness practices even way back in the 90s. I had been trained in mindfulness, and she learned how to get more in touch with the present moment rather than getting too caught up in, you know, the uncertainties about the future. And then finally, we clarified her core values, what was most important to her, what she wanted her life to be about, the things that she wanted to be able to share and teach her children. And she got on a regular plan where every day she would ask herself, what is the most values consistent thing that I can do in this day to make this day a meaningful day? So I will turn it back to Dr. Messner. I can't wait to hear from our next presenter.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Jones. That was really outstanding and so compelling, and I think for all of our listeners, so poignant in terms of the example you gave and how you worked with this woman over a period of time to help her to cope, and I'm sure how you helped many other people to cope. So I hope that this has been helpful to our participants today. Thank you so much. Thank you. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. And our next speaker is Dr. Jean-Philippe Lorenzo. And Dr. Lorenzo is Senior Scientist, Helen F. Graham Cancer Center and Research Institute, Unidel A. Gilchrist Sparks, the third Chair in the Social Sciences, and Professor, Department of Psychological and Brain Sciences, University of Delaware. And Dr. Lorenzo will be addressing living with continuing uncertainty, promoting effective healthcare communication, and communicating with your healthcare team about quality of life and lifestyle concerns. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Lorenzo.
Hi, everybody. Let me just say first, I really enjoyed hearing the presentations of Dr. Marat, Dr. Johns, and I appreciate all of you being here for this session. So I'll be talking about two topics. One, living with continuing uncertainty, promoting effective healthcare communication. And then I will also be touching on a second topic, communicating with your healthcare team about quality of life and lifestyle concerns. So about the first topic, basically healthcare communication. I think it's probably most helpful to view the doctors, the nurses, and the medical team, and you yourself as a patient, as well as your family members, as part of a team. You're all on the same team, and you're working together to try to do the best job that you can to be able to manage your breast cancer. Treatments for triple-negative breast cancer, TNBC, for short, are getting better and better every year. There are more and more survivors. When you talk to your oncologist or your nurse, I think one piece of advice would be to write down anything they talk about on paper. Even if you think you'll remember, I think it's important to write these things down because a lot of patients, when they leave the office, they sometimes draw blanks. And so it's best to write it down on paper. You can also ask whether the electronic health system that the hospital or the cancer center you're visiting allows you to review your clinic visit notes. I mean, I know that when I go to hospital visits, I can view my clinic notes. And if your system allows that, I think that can be very helpful because it's a resume, it's a summary of what was discussed with your provider. And try to keep a single folder with everything that you get with your visits. So, you know, I know this is a very practical thing, but a small thing, but I think it's important. Try to have a folder or a binding, three-hole punch, whatever works for you to keep all these documents together. Ask as many questions as you need, you feel to. Don't worry about whether they seem silly or don't make any sense. Don't worry about looking dumb in front of your oncologist or your nurse. It's important that you get all your questions answered. Another suggestion is to take someone with you, like your spouse or your significant other, or a trusted family member or a good friend. When you go to your appointment, they can be another pair of eyes, another pair of ears, another brain that can help you process this information. They can help take notes. They can make sure that you understand what was discussed and whether what you were told jives with what they heard as well. And you can talk with that person about your fears of cancer recurrence. I've been studying fear of cancer recurrence now for about 15 years, and I've been a professor for about 30 years. And one of the topics that I focus on is how fear of cancer recurrence takes place in a relationship context. So one of the ways to cope with and deal with these fears is to talk with your significant others. And that often is associated with not only lower fear of cancer recurrence, but more intimacy, more connection with those folks in your life. Talk with your doctor or nurse about what you want to hear news about, about how you want to hear news about your health. So what I mean by that is, do you want to hear everything all at once, or do you want the information gradually? Do you want all the dirty details, or do you want to just discuss the facts and the higher level facts? Different people are different, and I think you have a right to be able to request the way in which the information is given to you. Which family members or friends can they share information with, and when? That's also on the table. And you have a right to privacy as well, and you have the right to receive and review your medical records if you wish to do so. So those are things you should keep in mind. So the second topic, and I know I only have a couple minutes left, is communicating with your healthcare team about quality of life and lifestyle concerns. So ask the hospital or the cancer centers about survivorship programming or other services that are available to you. Okay? A lot of times these programs and the programming that's offered can be very, very helpful. As you transition to follow-up care for primary treatment, that can feel disorienting. So cancer care teams can sometimes be spread thin. So feel free to be proactive in communicating with us. Proactivity is really important when you're interfacing with the healthcare system. When discussing quality of life and lifestyle concerns, feel free to bring up important issues like fatigue, pain, sexual health, emotional distress, financial challenges, social challenges. Keep in mind that there may be ongoing treatment-related side effects or even late effects of certain treatments that you receive, like lymphedema. I mentioned earlier fatigue, chemo brain, peripheral neuropathy, sexual side effects, even depression and relationship and intimacy issues. Those are all things that come up, and you should feel free to talk about them and raise them. Don't be afraid to see a counselor if you have concerns and you want help with quality of life issues or lifestyle concerns. Often cancer centers will have a cancer psychology team or psycho-oncologists who specialize in working with folks just like you and your family members, if necessary. Ask about resources for financial concerns. Ask about resources for insurance, disability benefits, transportation. Three of the top concerns that patients have when it comes to, post-treatment life is that the cancer may occur. That's what we're talking about here today in this whole session. But also, there are significant issues related to body image and healthy lifestyle, like eating, nutrition, and exercise. Those are top concerns. And finally, side effects like brain fog, being able to think clearly. These are top concerns. If those are concerns you have, please express them to your care team. Financial toxicity is a real issue for certain patients. There's a huge financial burden, and then associated psychological distress that cancer patients face in terms of covering the cost of their care. There are programs often that you may not be aware of to help you with that, okay? And finally, the thing I would like to say is keep a diary or a journal. If you're the kind of person who tends to do that or would like to start doing that, diary or journal your side effects, your lifestyle concerns, so you can have them available to you when you go to a future appointment. So I'll just end in saying that Cancer Care, the organization that's sponsoring this event, they have some great resources on their website, like communicating your healthcare with your healthcare team. And I'm hearing a patient scratching in the background, sorry. But anyway, they have some great resources, and I think they're going to talk about that later in the session. So thanks for listening, and I'll be available for any questions at the end of the session.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Lorenzo. That was a superb presentation. Really just excellent, covering such important topics. And the concept of keeping a diary is so important for our participants as well when they see their healthcare team. So thank you so much. Thank you. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A as well. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Karen Hurley, and Dr. Hurley is psychologist, hereditary cancer risk, clinical member, cancer prevention, control, and population research program, Case Comprehensive Cancer Center, Cleveland Clinic. And Dr. Hurley will be addressing tips for coping with fear of recurrence, balancing reality with stress management tips, using mind-body techniques to cope with fear of recurrence, and how to select the mind-body techniques that are best for you. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Hurley.
Hello. I would like to thank you for inviting me to return to this conference. I'd like to extend a welcome to people who are new to these conferences and also to those who may be returning. What I want to share with you today comes from my work with patients who are dealing with cancer and the fear that it will come back. And the more that I do this work as a clinical psychologist, the more I've come to appreciate how overwhelming anxiety and fear of recurrence can be, but also how subtle it can be in terms of how it shifts, how it can intensify, how it can spin up rapidly. Sometimes it will be triggered, and one of our other speakers has talked about potential triggers, and sometimes it is out of the blue. Sometimes it's focused more in the mind, maybe as overthinking, and sometimes it's more nameless sensations that are you experience in the body, or sometimes it's just an uncomfortable mix between the two of them. So like all forms of discomfort, when we have it, when we have a fear of recurrence, the thing that we want to do with something uncomfortable is that we want to get rid of it. All right. So this year, so I was thinking about mind-body techniques. It took me back to a time when I was doing yoga, and I had a yoga teacher who would tell us when we had pain while we were doing a new position, she would tell us to view the pain as intensity. And the first time she said that, I thought, oh, that sounds easy for you. But when I tried the idea on, I found that at least some of the time it did change not only how long I was able to stay in a pose because I was relating to the pain a little differently, but also how I stayed in it. And so that was interesting to me. So I thought, well, what can we do with that in terms of fear of recurrence? Is there a way that we can change the question that allows us to cope with it differently? So what I want to suggest to you today is to think about when you're having a fear of recurrence is not so much, how do I get rid of this? But if we change the question to, what needs attention? Like pain in the body, when we have discomfort, it might be a signal or information about some kind of impact that the cancer has had that is still affecting you. So in what way can we move a little closer and give good attention to the impacts of the cancer and that is expressing itself as fear of recurrence? So for example, if you think about when you're worrying about cancer and whether it's going to come back, What form does it take? Is it more visual? Are you getting images or specific memories that are occurring over and over again? That may be a sign of a stress or a trauma reaction that is linked. That might be a signal for some professional attention, needing to do some emotional processing around the cancer. It may be a signal that the diagnosis you went through and the treatment may be challenging important beliefs that are still unsettled. For example, you may still be struggling with a sense of vulnerability, seeing from cancer how easy it is to get knocked off track, and you may be finding it difficult to trust in the future. What if you've put all this effort into rebuilding your life, getting things back on track, and then it gets knocked down again? You might also be having issues with control or fairness, feeling maybe that you did everything you could to prevent cancer, or you were trying to be healthy, and you got cancer anyway, right? You may be dealing with treatment effects, maybe from chemotherapy, and thinking, I would do anything to keep that from happening again, but there are lots of things you can do to reduce your risk, but no one can promise you that it won't come back or that you won't have to have chemotherapy ever again. So these thoughts may be turning within you, and addressing these deeper questions may be part of coping with the fear of recurrence. Sometimes, and this isn't all the time, but I've noticed that with some people who have been through trauma in their past in some way, whether it was some form of abuse or an accident or, you know, anything that can trigger a trauma reaction, is that past stressful events and the more recent stress of going through cancer, it's like they echo off of each other, right? And so it intensifies the experience, and one of the results of that is a fear of recurrence. So it can be a signal that maybe it's something you've already worked through, but that now is being put in a new light by the experience of cancer that needs some additional attention, or maybe there's something in your past that you've never sought treatment before, and maybe it's time to consider that. I recently worked with someone who had a different medical condition. It wasn't cancer, but it was a similar, very stressful diagnosis, and with a strong possibility that there might be a recurrence in the future. And so as we worked through that, we did some trauma-focused work, and by telling and retelling his story, we noticed a couple of important shifts that for him, the experience of going through this diagnosis was about control, that he had done a lot to be healthy and control his risk of disease, but still had this overwhelming diagnosis. And by telling and retelling the story and focusing on the trauma, we saw some spontaneous shifts that he became more accepting of what he could and could not control. He had more spontaneous gratitude, not that he should be grateful for things, but feeling more present in the moment with gratitude. And we noticed that his fear for recurrence didn't exactly go away, but it faded into the background. It was easier to move his focus away from it when it did come. It became less compelling. So by listening to the fear of recurrence, but then going back to what was it about his experience that he found so challenging, that helped relax the fear of recurrence. So in closing, what I want to do is lead you through a breath exercise that I've done before in these sessions, and it's called the breath brush. And what we do in this exercise is that we're using the breath not to try to get rid of the fear of recurrence, but to give it good attention, to see what emerges, and that then gives some indication of where to go next. So what we're going to do is let yourself settle wherever you're sitting and allow your breath to go in. We're not taking a special deep breath or a deep breath, but allow your breath to travel inwards and finding any sensations of anxiety, allow the breath to brush over it very lightly, like a soft breeze or a feather, or the way that you might stroke a baby's forehead, super lightly. We're not trying to change anything, just experiencing that softness as it passes over the sensations. Allow that to happen once or twice. And then you may notice that you feel a little calmer, or you may notice a new feeling that has come up instead, right? So whatever it is, let's give that good acceptance and good attention. And the thought I will leave you with is, by giving this good attention, it may help relax your fear of recurrence, your worry. It's also an act of self-esteem to give yourself that good attention, that step by step, every time that you do this, it's a way of self-care. So thank you very much for your kind attention.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Hurley. That was really very, very helpful to our participants, and very comprehensive, and a wonderful technique for people to leave with from you. So thank you so much, Dr. Hurley. And our next speaker is Ms. Bonnie Fuchs, and Ms. Fuchs is Executive Director, Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. And she'll be discussing Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation's free national programs and services, and provide the phone number for Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and their website. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Fuchs.
Thank you for the introduction, Dr. Messner. On behalf of the TNBC community and the TNBC Foundation, thank you to the doctors on the call for their very informative presentations. We're so grateful for the wonderful partnership we have with Cancer Care. This workshop today is one of many programs offered by the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. Our programming is specifically designed to address the needs of the triple negative community, from patients and survivors to caregivers and loved ones. And I sincerely hope you will take advantage of them to help navigate through diagnosis, treatment, and survivorship. On our website, tnbcfoundation.org, you can find TNBC-specific educational brochures and fact sheets that are available as free downloads, information about triple-negative breast cancer and dealing with a triple-negative diagnosis, a TNBC-specific clinical trial matching service, information about our phone helpline provided by Cancer Care. Our online discussion forums will allow you to connect with other patients, survivors, caregivers, and loved ones to ask questions about treatment, about how to manage side effects. Most importantly, these resources are there to help you and to remind you that you are not alone. It goes without saying that TNBC-specific medical research is extremely important to our foundation. We not only support cutting-edge research at leading medical institutions, but we work hard to inform you about any new developments in this area. Finally, we have monthly virtual meetups for our TNBC community, Metastatic Mondays, Tuesdays with TNBC Friends, and Thursdays with TNBC Friends. And in partnership with Touch, the Black Breast Cancer Alliance, we have an additional monthly meetup specifically for Black women. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram for important updates and announcements regarding educational and support opportunities throughout the year, and be able to register for these and all our upcoming programs. Thank you for joining the workshop today, and I will turn the program back over to Dr. Messner.
Thank you so much, Ms. Hughes. That was just a wonderful presentation. It's a wonderful organization and a go-to organization for all of you on the call today. So I hope you'll take advantage of all of their resources. And our next speaker is Ms. Sonielle South. And Ms. South is an older adult program manager, clinical supervisor of cancer care. She's an oncology social worker. And she'll be addressing Cancer Care's free programs and services and our hope line and website. I'm going to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Seth.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. As mentioned, my name is Danielle, and I am the Older Adult Program Manager and Clinical Supervisor here at Cancer Care. The Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care have partnered together to ensure that those diagnosed with TNBC have access to free psychosocial services and support, as well as information on clinical trials. The Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation has also generously funded the TNBC helpline, which provides callers with access to comprehensive services. Some of these services include resource navigation, counseling, educational workshops, publications, and limited financial assistance. Individuals diagnosed with TNBC may choose to supplement existing social networks by joining a support group or engaging in counseling. Joining a group can offer the opportunity to speak with one another, gather information, and provide support. Cancer Care offers TNBC-specific national online support groups, and these are moderated by oncology social workers. Again, these groups can really help reduce feelings of loneliness or anxiety, explore new ways of coping, increase feelings of empowerment, and provide practical information about treatment and resources. If you're interested in joining, you can go through our website, cancercare.org, and select our services and then support groups. Also, navigating a diagnosis may come with financial concerns throughout one's treatment. If you are experiencing such hardships or concerns, there are organizations that may be able to help, and Cancer Care, in partnership with the TNBC Foundation, can assist in helping you locate these resources. We also offer resource navigation, which is a short-term, strength-based service to patients and caregivers affected by cancer nationally. A trained specialist will work with you to help find resources, referrals, and financial assistance. We also offer clinical trial information, resources, and support to help those affected by cancer. Cancer Care is developed a website called mytrialist.org to help people get connected to these trials. And if you are interested in learning more about the services that the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care offer, I would really encourage you to call the TNBC helpline at 877-880-8622. Our oncology social workers can share additional information about our services and can also help you explore ways to connect. It has been such a pleasure to be part of this workshop. So thank you for your attention, and I will now turn it back to Dr. Messner.
Thank you so much, Ms. Seth, for this wonderful presentation. Excellent. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A. Bella will explain to you how to queue up for questions. Bella?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So the question from one of our participants. And this one will be for Dr. Barot. If you didn't have affected lymph nodes and achieved PCR at surgery, how does that affect your chances of recurrence?
Thank you, Dr. Messner. That's a great question, which comes up a lot when we evaluate people. We know that having a complete pathological response or PCR correlates with the best outcomes and the lowest chance of the breast cancer coming back as compared to someone who had residual disease or cancer burden that was detected at the time of reviewing the surgical specimen. So the best outcome is with having a complete response, and that's why we continue just maintenance treatment for these patients as compared to someone who has residual disease, where we try to change the treatment so that we can improve their outcomes more than just the maintenance treatment. Thank you.
Thank you. So this is a question for Dr. Johns. I have been told that TNBC has a higher rate of return in the first 3 years, but is it 5 years?
And so this is Dr. Johns. I'm a psychologist, and so I'm not sure that I'm the best person to speak about the actual recurrence rates in triple negative breast cancer. I think that's
Thank
more
you.
Of a Dr. Barot question.
Okay. Dr. Barot, if you could take that question. Yeah, I have been told that it has a high rate of return the first 3 years, but is it 5 years?
Yes, so we do say that for triple-negative breast cancer, the highest chance of recurrence is within the first 5 years. But, of course, to that point, it is higher in the earlier years as compared to the later years. And that's why when we see patients for follow-up, we will follow much more closely, like every 3 to 6 months in the first 3 years, and then we can spread it out to 6 months to 12 years. But the recurrence chances still continue up to 12 years, after which we can be a little bit more relaxed with our follow-up, which is usually once a year.
And thank you so much. And another question for you, Dr. Barot. What can you tell us about the vaccine being developed at the Cleveland Clinic by Dr. Budd to prevent recurrence of triple-negative breast cancer?
Yes, that's a wonderful question. To your point, we have this very exciting clinical trial ongoing at the Cleveland Clinic, developing a vaccine against triple-negative breast cancer. So we know that all the breast cancer cells have this protein called alpha-lactalbumin that this vaccine is targeting. And we are studying how this vaccine can be given to people who are high risk, such as people with BRCA mutations, or prevent the cancer from coming back for people who had residual disease at the time of surgery, who also have a high risk of breast cancer coming back. This is in the very early stages of development still, so it's a very early stage trial for detecting if this is a safe vaccine to give in people. And once we know that this is a safe vaccine, which the results will hopefully come out soon, then we can move on to testing it in the larger population, seeing how effective this can be as well. But the initial studies only test for safety, and that's the current phase that the vaccine is in right now.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Let's see. So that's an interesting question about employment. I'm a single income, this is for Dr. Johns, I'm a single income household. I have a great deal of anxiety around losing my job as I work in tech where layoffs have been abundant lately. What are the best resources to understand what to share or not share, or that I have to share when interviewing and accepting employment for a new company or job in the future? What are my rights as a person who has cancer and the expectation of job? What resource will help me understand my insurance options if I were to be laid off?
Yeah, I love that question. So I've got a couple of things that I would like to share. I don't think that you are required to share anything about your medical history. Potential employers shouldn't ask about it, and you should never have to share that information because that's private information. And the other thing that I'll mention is there is a resource that we are very impressed with. It's that helps with navigating kind of workplace issues after cancer, and I'm looking it up as we are speaking right now because I want to make sure that I appropriately talk about it. But I think it's called Cancer Plus Careers.
I think it's Cancer and Careers, I think it's called.
Yeah. I've checked out their website recently, and they have lots of educational materials, lots of services and other information, and I would also encourage to reach out to the Cancer Cares organization as well, because their navigators can also help in navigating some of those, you know, really sensitive workplace questions, you know, that you did ask about. So because you definitely have rights as a cancer survivor. And so I think both of those resources could be really useful. And I would just invite, if there's anybody else, you know, Dr. Messner or anybody else, you know, if you know of anything beyond what I shared.
So what we'll do is we will send all of our participants the resources that are mentioned with their websites and telephone numbers. And Cancer and Careers is an excellent one. There's also another group. We'll send you information that we have about workplace issues that people struggle with cancer. And Dr. Johns is quite correct. You do not have to share your medical history with an employer when you're being interviewed. So that's something you really want to hold on. We have done programs
on
the website. Yes.
Can I make a comment? This is
yes.
J.P. Lawrence, Dr. Lawrence. So I just wanted to say two things related to this issue, just to add to what Dr. Johns said. One is that, you know, this is an issue of workplace stigma, right? The decision to disclose a cancer diagnosis to a future employer or a potential future employer, right? And there is research that shows that cancer survivors frequently report concerns about being stigmatized or discriminated against in the workplace, like, you know, fears of hiring discrimination, limited career advancement because, you know, employer might think that they may not, you know, be around for, you know, future advancement, negative assumptions about work capacity, all these things. So these are very real issues. One thing I can say is my understanding is that there are anti-discrimination laws, including the Americans with Disability Act and the Family Medical Leave Act, FMLA. Those provide safeguards for cancer survivors like you. They protect against discrimination, and they provide, as the title suggests, of these laws, the right to reasonable accommodations for which you do not have to necessarily disclose what those specific, you know, conditions that you have are. So I would just encourage you to look into the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Family Medical Leave Act, because those are anti-discrimination laws that our country has.
And we have done a number of webinars on cancer in the workplace, and so we will also send you the links to those programs as well. So that, and we will also send you the link to these Americans with Disabilities Act and Family Medical Leave Act, so you'll have access to that as well. So anything that we mentioned during the program today, you'll be getting a SurveyMonkey evaluation within about 10 days of the program, and in that evaluation will be all the resources that are mentioned during the program. And I do want to remind everyone that we have a number of triple negative breast cancer programs coming up. In October, we have October 16th, triple negative breast cancer and African American women. On October 22nd, we have metastatic triple negative breast cancer, strategies to cope. And in October 29th, we have for caregivers coping with the stresses of caregiving when your loved one has triple negative breast cancer. So we'll be also sending you all that information as well. I have to say this has been a remarkable program. So many wonderful, wonderful questions that people asked. And I just want to be sure that we haven't missed anything that I want to be sure to include this in our. So, yes, it's called Cancer and Careers, or Triage Cancer as well. And I'm going to ask our speakers if they would provide a takeaway from today's program for each of you, from today's program. So I'm going to ask our speakers just to provide a takeaway from today's program. So I'll start with Dr. Barote, if you'd like to provide a takeaway from today's program.
Yes, we know that triple negative breast cancer is the more aggressive form of breast cancer, and of course there's always a worry of recurrence and anxiety associated with the breast cancer coming back. I think my biggest takeaway is that, you know, clinical trials and new drugs are being developed every day to improve outcomes for people with triple negative breast cancer. And I would encourage all of you to always look out and ask for clinical trials, because new treatments are available, and we of course, need to do better, and hopefully one day we will be at a place where we can say that we will be able to cure triple-negative breast cancer, but that's only possible with trials and new drugs. So please always talk to your team about those.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And Dr. Johns?
Yes. So I would just invite everybody to be as gentle with themselves as they possibly can. We all do a great job of being a good friend to others, but sometimes we short shrift ourselves a little bit. So I would just invite everybody to be gentle with yourself when you notice your triggers, when you notice your fear, whatever it is that you're noticing. Just make space for that. Try to focus on what is true for you in this present moment, and trying to think about what can you do that's consistent with your core values that will give your life meaning, even if you have to bring the fear of recurrence with you on the ride of your life.
Well, thank you so much. And Dr. Lorenzo?
I want to talk to my African-American and Hispanic brothers and sisters out there, because I'm Hispanic. I'm also Black. My father was an immigrant from Haiti. African-Americans and Hispanics and those who are lower socioeconomic status in our country, they're at higher risk for having triple-negative breast cancer. That is a proven fact. So you need to be proactive, and you need to get out there and make sure that you get taken care of. Your team is there to help you, but you know, you got to look out after yourself, and take advantage of all the resources that are out there. So my African American and Hispanic brothers and sisters, please take care of yourselves and take advantage of all the resources that you know that have been covered in this workshop.
And Ashley, thank you so much. It's such an important point that you've made, Dr. Lorenzo, and also and what you've accomplished career-wise with all the things that weren't necessarily working for you. So I think that we will be doing a program on African-American women and cancer. You'll be getting that information from us as well. We partner on that one with Touch and with Sisters Network, so that those are great organizations as well to get support from in addition to cancer care. And Ms. Fuchs, if you'd like to add something as well, a takeaway from the audience.
Yes, please visit our website, tmbcfoundation.org, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram for important updates and information regarding education, information, and support opportunities throughout the year.
Thank you. And Ms. Saf?
I'd like to say that if you or a loved one has been diagnosed with triple-negative breast cancer, please know that you don't have to face this alone, that the TNBC Foundation and Cancer Care are here to support both patients and caregivers with our services. So please don't hesitate to reach out.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank all of our speakers, and I want to thank all of you who have asked such great questions as well. We unfortunately were not able to take everyone's question, but I do want to let you know that that support is available. For those of you who had a chance to ask a question, please go back to Treating Health to your team and ask them the question, because you've learned a lot from this program. And also for those of you who are still in queue and have a question, go back to Treating Health to your team. You've learned a lot. And again, ask your question of them, because they have all your records and everything like that. Also, I do want to remind all of you that it appears that many of you have told us over the years that during the day, you usually are able to reach your healthcare team, but evenings, weekends, and holidays are often difficult to reach a doctor, and those are often times when you have questions or concerns or things arise. So always check with your healthcare team what numbers to call them, weekends, evenings, and holidays. And also, I just want to reiterate that you are not alone, that you have the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, Cancer Care, and many other organizations to support you. So please do take care, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. And thank you all for your participation in today's workshop. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.